Are you ready to unlock the true potential of your body and mind? Introducing Adalema Coherent Water, a revolutionary new way to improve your health and well-being. Adalema has been clinically proven to significantly increase ATP levels. These are the mitochondrial energy of your body. It significantly improves your gut health by improving the state of your microbiome and provides up to 12 years of biological age rejuvenation within 3 months of drinking this water. Imagine having more energy, a healthier gut, a clearer mind, and a youthful body. With Adalema water, it all stops being a dream. Take the first step towards unlocking your true potential. Try Adalema water and revolutionize your life. Visit coherent-water.com. Every purchase comes with a 100% money-back guarantee, so you can literally taste the difference risk-free. Go to coherent-water.com. Don't forget to put in the code GENIUS10 to get some money off. Join the water revolution. Again, go to coherent-water.com and put in the code GENIUS10 for a discount.
Forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field: sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast. I have Rachel Rudolph, PhD. She's an assistant professor. She's an extension vegetable specialist. This is under the Department of Horticulture at University of Kentucky. So we're going to talk about her work there and possibly talk about high tunnels and vegetable crop production. So Rachel, thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, no problem. Tell me a bit about your background and how you got into this area. And then I want to ask you about what you're working on right now.
Yeah. So, you know, I think I'd always been really into the environment, kind of, you know, worried about recycling and pollution and that kind of thing, even as a little kid. And then as I got into college, I learned more about the local food movement and got interested in that. And then after college and right at the tail end of college, I guess I was just starting to become interested in plant science. And then I went into the Peace Corps and I started working with farm families and gardening and just kind of like my first experience into extension work, even though, you know, I didn't think about it like that at the time. And I came back to the U.S. after completing my time in the Peace Corps in Paraguay and just, you know, I really liked working with plants and I really liked working with people. And, you know, agriculture is that, is plants and people. A lot of it, you know, sometimes there's livestock. So, and that's where horticulture came in. And I just went from there.
Well, quick question. What is horticulture versus agriculture versus aquaculture versus viticulture versus permaculture versus, there's like 8 million cultures. So, you know, some of these terms seem interchangeable, but like, for instance, horticulture versus agriculture, what's the difference?
So I would say horticulture is underneath agriculture, right? It's like a branch of agriculture, just like equine science would be a branch of agriculture, right? Just like aquaculture would be a branch of agriculture. So the agriculture is like the broad term, right? And then we've got all these like subclasses. And that's honestly one of the things that, so I'm in horticulture, right? And it is, I mean, I think very broadly defined as the art or practice of garden cultivation and management, right? Like when you Google that, that's what comes up. But it's basically, you know, plant cultivation. And usually that means, well, that always means fruit, vegetables, ornamentals, nuts, you know, those kind of usually horticultural crops are usually the things that don't necessarily need to be processed to be consumed in that sense, right? Vegetables and fruit, most of them, unlike a lot of agronomic crops, we don't need to process them to enjoy them. And so that's another way to kind of look at it.
Okay.
Sometimes turf grass is also thrown in with horticulture, but sometimes it's not. So it can kind of be a broad category for a lot of things.
Okay, gotcha. So what are some of the projects that you're working on right now at University of Kentucky?
Yeah, so my lab specifically, we big thing right now is working with root knot nematode. So root knot nematode's a microscopic plant parasitic organism. It looks basically like a microscopic worm. It is a microscopic worm, and it resides in the soil and it infects plant roots and can cause a lot of damage and yield decline and in some cases crop death. And so we've been looking at that kind of across Kentucky. Where is it? What species are we looking at? You know, what species are growers dealing with? And also grower awareness. So do they know they've got this? Do they know how to manage it? What management practices are they using? Those kind of things. And then, you know, kind of piggybacking off of that is we've been doing a lot of on-farm experiments with growers, you know, trying different methods to manage root knot nematode, one of which is using grafted tomatoes that are resistant to root knot nematode and kind of evaluating them against non-resistant varieties that growers are commonly using.
Okay. So, I mean, what are nematodes? Are essentially what, like microscopic worms or?
Yeah, they're microscopic worms. They're not like earthworms, right? They're non-segmented and they feed. So they've got a stylet that helps them feed off of plant roots. So they basically slowly take nutrients away from plants. They can invade, some of them invade plant roots and lay eggs in plant roots. So it's kind of, and they can produce really quickly. And so things, one plant parasitic nematode can quickly become 500, right, in very short time.
Okay. Do the plants have any defenses against them? How do you know if nematodes are attacking?
Right.
What's observable?
Yeah. So some plants do have natural resistance. Some are naturally just non-host, right? So the plant parasitic nematode cannot infect and cannot reproduce in the presence of this plant, right? It's just a genetic component to it. Other plants have kind of an antagonistic qualities. So for example, mustard crops have produced glucosinolates. And when you chop up a mustard plant, right, you get this volatile gas that has suppressive qualities to it that can basically antagonize and suppress nematode populations. So those are kind of two different. So the mustard itself, if you don't chop it up, right, that mustard plant could be a host for root knot nematode or plant parasitic nematodes in general. But when you've chopped it up, you've created this kind of this chemical compound that suppresses them. So that's a really interesting component. And so, yeah, plants in general, there's kind of a spectrum of non-hosts, and then you've got resistant plants that may allow some reproduction to occur or some feeding to occur from the plant parasite, but fairly low. And then you've got susceptible plants, right, that of course allow reproduction, infection, feeding, all that kind of thing. And so, and then kind of in that spectrum, you've also got tolerant plants, which we were kind of discovering this. They still produce pretty high yields. We've got in one of our projects, right, this particular variety, this that we looked at, it produced very high yields comparable to some of the other treatments, but it also allowed for pretty high infection rates, root knot nematode. So, right, I would classify that more as tolerant because you're not managing the population very well, but you're still producing pretty decent yields. So from a grower's perspective, if you're just looking at the above ground, you know, qualities, the grower may think they're doing really well because they've got decent yield.
So, okay. What happens to plants when they're under nematode attack? Like how would a grower know that what's going on?
Yes. So in this particular for root knot nematode specifically, the above ground symptoms can be kind of hard to see, hard to decipher. So the plant may start to kind of look yellow, starts lower in the leaves. As the symptoms, as the infection progresses, the plant will start to look necrotic. So the leaves will start to die and turn brown, and you'll have lower yield. right? But if you're not really paying attention, you may chalk this up to a nutrient deficiency. You may not notice that it's, you know, a lot of growers wouldn't necessarily know it's root knot nematode. And if you're not really calculating or taking notes on your yield from year to year, you may not notice this decline in yield over the course of several years. It may take a little while. So the above ground symptoms are kind of hard to notice, as it can kind of look like a lot of different things. But if you pull up the plant roots, most of the time you will see galling. So the roots look knotted and gnarled, and that is a plant response to root knot nematode infection. So that's kind of the telltale sign of a root knot nematode infection, is pulling up those plant roots and seeing that galling. And that's why it's called root knot nematode, right? There's knots on the roots.
Are you ready to unlock the true potential of your body and mind? Introducing Adalema Coherent Water, a revolutionary new way to improve your health and well-being. Adalema has been clinically proven to significantly increase ATP levels. These are the mitochondrial energy of your body. It significantly improves your gut health by improving the state of your microbiome and provides up to 12 years of biological age rejuvenation within 3 months of drinking this water. Imagine having more energy, a healthier gut, a clearer mind, and a youthful body. With Adalema water, it all stops being a dream. Take the first step towards unlocking your true potential. Try Adalema water and revolutionize your life. Visit coherent-water.com. Every purchase comes with a 100% money-back guarantee, so you can literally taste the difference risk-free. Go to coherent-water.com. Don't forget to put in the code GENIUS10 to get some money off. Join the water revolution. Again, go to coherent-water.com and put in the code GENIUS10 for a discount.
So galling is the appearance of these knots, and they're not root nodules, right?
Yes. Yeah. They're not nodules in the sense of, you know, we think of nodules as a good thing, right? Like nitrogen fixation. They kind of look like that, honestly. But, you know, tomatoes don't fix nitrogen in that way, right? So that would be a clear indication if you pulled up a tomato plant and saw this, right? That would be, the galls or the knots can vary in size, right? From small, you know, like a BB size to, you know, the size of a quarter. And it's pretty big. Yeah.
Does anything live inside these, I don't know if you call them nodules, or what would you call them, but do bacteria take up residence, or fungi, or what happens? Do they contain the eggs of the nematodes, or are they houses for nematodes? What happens?
Right. So the kind of certain with root knots, they're sedentary endoparasites. So that means they enter the roots and they lay eggs, and then, you know, those eggs hatch and they go on to infect other roots. Right. And so the knots themselves are really more of a plant response to this infection. And then other nematodes will, you know, other types of plant parasites will, they're migratory endoparasites. And so they kind of move in and out much more quickly. And then there's the set, and then there is the ectoparasites. So they will only stay on the outside of the root and feed. But this feeding, they're basically creating wounds in the plant roots. And that can lead to other infection by other, you know, soil-borne pathogens, right? So that is an additional complication to the whole thing, right? It's, you know, you've cut yourself on a, you know, piece of glass, and then something else gets in your wound, right? And it kind of can spiral from there.
But has anyone done like biopsies and cross sections of these, you know, these nematode constructed bumps? To see, is there any underlying structure, or again, other organisms?
Right, yes, there are lots. Yeah, I totally encourage people to, you know, Google root knot nematode galls, right?
Maybe it's creating like a localized, you know, pathogenic microbiome around the roots, which also affects the plants. I don't know. I don't know what it houses, or again, the structure.
Right. It's basically, they make these large cells. So it's kind of, again, to my knowledge, there's no like pathogen in the gall. It's just like a huge cell, And again, it's a plant response from this feeding. It's kind of, it's not necessarily anything's in that gall, but it does inhibit the plant's ability to take up nutrients and take up water. And that is where, you know, that's where the problem then shows itself above ground, right? The plant starts to wilt, the plant starts to turn yellow, the plant starts to turn brown, because it can't take, no matter how much you irrigate, no matter how much you fertilize, it cannot take up that nutrient solution.
Why? What's happening to the roots? Are they, is this nodule like going into the center of the root? So literally nothing can flow past it. Is it sitting on the outside edge of the root, but it's somehow like putting tendrils into the root and compromising it? Like why do you think mechanistically it compromises root function?
So it's not a nodule. This gall is really just inhibiting. It's changed the root morphology. So it's basically just inhibiting the plant's ability to take up water as it naturally would. Right. And so I totally encourage people to Google, right, root knot nematode damage to plants. And you can see, usually when you Google them, you'll see like a healthy root next to a damaged root. And you can kind of see how, knotted and different it is. And as far as like, you know, genetically, what is happening in there, I couldn't answer that question for you. But it is changing the shape of the root and changing the root's ability to, you know, take up water and nutrients.
Hmm. But we can't tell, like, again, mechanistically how they do it. Is it obvious or is it not understood?
No, people know. I just don't know.
Okay. So what is some of the, obviously you deal with it. Which plants seem to be most susceptible to this, and what can a grower do to try to, you know, reduce the nematodes and get rid of them?
So as I said, there's resistant crops that they can utilize to suppress the population. You can do nematicides, soil fumigant, soil solarization. Basically, no one method is going to solve the problem. There's no eradication of root knot nematode or of plant parasitic nematodes. You can, you know, drive the population down and then manage it from there. But once it's there, they're there. So, and they can be very deep in the soil. And so it is really hard to, you know, you can't get every last one.
How do nematodes move through the soil? Like, how do they get to the roots in the first place? You know, are the eggs near the roots and they're just spawning locally and then worming their way around to the right spot, or how do they navigate, you think?
Yeah. So nematodes themselves don't move too much by themselves, right? So they don't move very far. A lot of it is us, you know, moving soil around, which is really common in agriculture, right? You're weeding, you're tilling, you're plowing, right? And soil kind of gets turned over and gets moved around. So that's kind of the large movement can happen through there. They can also, you know, get moved a little bit through water, but they're also drawn to the roots. Like the root exudates, right? There's a response there. And so they're kind of drawn just naturally to the roots from the exudates. And so they know where they're going, right? They sense that there's a host there.
Do the nematodes have a life cycle where they go through different forms, or they just stay nematodes the whole time?
There's a life cycle. So for root knot nematode, there is five stages. So that would be, you know, you go from egg. So the female hatchet lays about 500 eggs at one time. The eggs can overwinter. So they can survive in the soil for quite a long time. If it's, you know, cool, then they may just hang out as is. The J2 is the infective stage. So that's the first, basically the second juvenile phase. And that's when they look like a worm, right? So that's when they first look like a worm. J1, J2, they can start infecting roots. They move into the roots, they infect them. J3, J4, those are just later juvenile phases that people don't focus very much on. A lot of the, you know, a lot of what we focus on is that infective stage. And then that juvenile will either turn into a female and can, you know, produce eggs on their own, or a male. And so it goes like that. And so the females are kind of globular shaped. They do not, the adult females look very round. They don't look like a worm per se. The adult males do.
Do they have a seasonality of appearance? You know, do they tend to go away in the winter and come in the growing season, or what do they do?
So they're active in the warmer, when soil temperatures are warmer. So somewhere between, you know, 20 degrees Celsius and, you know, 30 degrees Celsius, that's kind of their active, that's their peak time of activity. So in the winter, typically, right, the soil is much cooler and they're there, but they're not active.
Okay. What happens if you're using season extenders, like greenhouses, high tunnels? If you have thermal masses inside those, like what does that do to the nematodes? Do they still go away at the same time, or now they stick around?
Yeah, so that's been something my lab has been working on, is this kind of, we've been focused on high tunnels because, so a high tunnel is a passively heated and cooled structure. It's kind of like a greenhouse, except there's not temperature control per se. There's kind of temperature management, right? And it's just protected agriculture. And people normally are growing in the soil in a high tunnel versus in a greenhouse, they're probably using potting soil, right? Soilless media. And so in a high tunnel, there's a lot, because of that, it's a warmer environment than it is outside. We suspect that root knot nematode can get going, right, a lot quicker, right? Because the soil temperatures are warmer earlier in the season than they normally would be out in the open field. Mm. So that's one effect. You're also, because you have this structure, you can produce for longer because of these nice warm temperatures. There's a host crop in that high tunnel for longer than there normally would be outdoors, right? So then this nematode also has a host for, you know, maybe all year long. I mean, you can produce in a high tunnel all year long. And so you've also given them a host for most of the year. And so that also will affect reproduction and, you know, the population density of root knot nematode overall. Yeah.
Okay. Any other, I'm sure there's plenty of others, but any other major projects that you're working on that, you know, you're making some headway in, where in terms of understanding, where a lot of people don't understand what you're looking at, or are you doing more optimization type thing on the gardens that you're in control of, or what's your work like?
So yeah, we're also doing soil solarization. So looking at what temperatures we can reach in the soil, and soil solarization has the potential to really be valuable for a lot of growers. They don't have to, you know, it's organic or conventional. You don't have to, there's no chemical applications. Small scale growers can implement this. Large scale growers can implement this. So it has a lot of flexibility there. And it has the potential to be beneficial at managing a really wide range of issues. So not only root knot nematode, but soil borne diseases, right? Weeds, right? So that it's just could be something that could be really valuable for growers. And it's not necessarily a new thing in general, but it hasn't really been evaluated here in Kentucky at our latitude. And so we're looking at what temperatures can we reach at different soil depths at what times of the year. So we're looking at that, and we've got some really exciting, interesting preliminary data on that.
What's your goal?
Well, so it really depends on, it really depends on what people, the target for people is, right? So for example, sclerotinia, that is a soil-borne disease that is usually can be suppressed or killed at about 40 degrees Celsius, right? So that our goal for if someone's targeting that on their farm, right, you'd want to hit that temperature. And you'd also want to hit it probably at least, you know, 4 to 6 inches into the soil profile. So you can get If you can get 2 inches into the soil, you know, deep into the soil, that's great. But ideally you'd want to go, you know, you'd want to reach that temperature even lower just to make sure that you've covered your bases. Root knot nematode, based off of our work, I suspect can be suppressed or killed at a lower temperature. So more in the, you know, maybe 37, 38 degrees Celsius range would be suitable. But they, as I said earlier, they can go even lower in the soil profile. They can be found even deeper in the soil profile. So you'd want to hit those temperatures even deeper than 6 inches, right? 8, 12 inches, that would be great.
Well, what about cover crops? I've seen that they'll significantly reduce the soil temperature. I don't know down to what depth, but do you utilize those? And you know, if you combine that with, let's say, mustard greens to kick the nematodes' asses, you know, that come there, would that be a good combination maybe for multiple reasons?
So are you talking about cover crops of reducing soil temperature in what way?
Well, I mean, so there's not bare ground. So supposedly, you know, certain cover crops not only will produce nitrogen for certain plants that don't fix it, but from what I've read, maybe I'm wrong, you know, certain ones will substantially reduce soil temperature because, again, it's not bare ground.
Right. So it's providing kind of a shade for the soil. So, yeah, that is an option. I'm not sure that, so the timing of when the cover crop would be produced and then when the nematode would be active, it may not coincide perfectly, but certainly cover crops could be utilized as a non-host or as biofumigation, which I described briefly earlier. I think those would be two really viable options, or potentially incorporating and tarping, right, with a clear plastic similar to soil solarization, right? And so you could kind of maybe do double duty there with biofumigation and soil solarization.
Okay, very good. Rachel, what's the best way for people to learn more about the work you're doing? It sounds like you're doing some, you know, researching some very unusual things. Again, where can they go to find out more about your work?
So we've got a website, vegcrops.ca.uky.edu. That's our lab website. We're also on Instagram, UKYVegCrops. You can find us on Facebook, similar title. We have a great YouTube channel if people are looking to, you know, learn more and just want to zone out and watch some videos. So that would be Kentucky Vegetable Crop Extension and Research. There's a lot of ways to find us.
Okay, very good. Well, Rachel, thank you for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
Are you ready to unlock the true potential of your body and mind? Introducing Adalema Coherent Water, a revolutionary new way to improve your health and well-being. Adalema has been clinically proven to significantly increase ATP levels. These are the mitochondrial energy of your body. It significantly improves your gut health by improving the state of your microbiome and provides up to 12 years of biological age rejuvenation within 3 months of drinking this water. Imagine having more energy, a healthier gut, a clearer mind, and a youthful body. With Adalema water, it all stops being a dream. Take the first step towards unlocking your true potential. Try Adalema water and revolutionize your life. Visit coherent-water.com. Every purchase comes with a 100% money-back guarantee, so you can literally taste the difference risk-free. Go to coherent-water.com. Don't forget to put in the code GENIUS10 to get some money off. Join the water revolution. Again, go to coherent-water.com and put in the code GENIUS10 for a discount.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at FindingGeniusPodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.